Please, speak as you might to a young child or a golden retriever.
It's an unfair game.
They're schemers. Schemers trying to control their little worlds.
Rich get richer, that's the law of the land.
It's just money.
Blasphemy! This is madness!
I drink your milkshake!
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of Milkshakes, Markets, Madness. My name is John Katsumita. I'm here with Brent Johnson. We welcome all those new to the show. Encourage you to visit milkshakespod.com to help you make a little more sense of our name. The dollar milkshake theory is an idea that Brent came up with to explain some of what goes on in the global financial system, because a lot of people actually have it a bit misinterpreted is probably perhaps the best way of putting it. And speaking of misinterpretation, I don't think anyone got this week right. So we did an earlier episode, and at that point, I can't even get my story straight, Brent. Things are moving so quick, but I believe the big story was Credit Suisse, this merger between Credit Suisse and UBS. Shortly thereafter, all eyes were on the Fed and the FOMC. They announced a rate hike despite all of the deposit outflows that we've been seeing from banks into money market funds. Basically, there's this argument, is it a liquidity crisis? Is it a solvency crisis? And, you know, perhaps it's just people finally realizing that they can get 4% risk-free while they're getting 0% in a risky bank. And so some of that escalated and then cooled down, because this was probably going back now a week. The Fed came out with BTFP, Bank Term Funding Program, which allowed banks to post this collateral that they were marking to as a hold to maturity asset. And if they actually sold that mark to market to raise capital, they would take a big loss. And so the Fed said, hey, park it with us. We'll give you par 100% so that you have the cash to satisfy depositors. Now, here we are post rate hike. It was only a 0.25% hike, but there's a lot of debate if the Fed was stoking the flames of everything I just described. And here we are on a Friday. We have some issues with Deutsche Bank and Yellen, who just a day ago said that they would not be guaranteeing depositors. And a couple months ago said there would never in her lifetime be another crisis. Basically called an emergency crisis roundtable to figure out what the heck is going on. So Brent, tell us what the heck is going on.
Well, you know, to kind of continue with some previous themes that we've talked about, we have a lot of madness and the market just continues to go violently sideways. I mean, we're basically right now where we were a week ago. You know, like you said, we came in on Monday morning. Credit Suisse had been, you know, kind of a shotgun marriage with UBS over the weekend. A lot of that was trying to get figured out. Some bondholders got put to zero while some of the equity holders got saved, and that's become a big deal. So markets were down dramatically on Monday. You know, they rallied by the close. You know, and the part of the reason they rallied was there was some, it wasn't exactly said, but it was, you know, kind of implied that, well, they were working on a thing where they would, backstop all deposits at banks. On Wednesday, we have the FOMC meeting. And they raise, but they change the language to say that they see no further rate hikes. It's going to be data dependent. They kind of walked back the forward guidance of more data rate hikes. They didn't say there wouldn't be, but they didn't explicitly say there would be. Initially, the market kind of took that as a pivot or dovish, however you want to describe that. And the market was up fairly big on Wednesday. But at one point while Powell was still, talking, still in the Q&A, a headline came over the wires from Yellen saying that she had no plans to increase the FDIC limits from 250, which it's probably true. She probably didn't have any plans to do that, but that just turned the market over and, you know, market sold off hard. And so the market sold off hard. It didn't quite get down to the level that it was on Monday morning, but sold off pretty hard from the high on, initially from the Fed release. And so in the last couple of days, we saw, you know, it was down and then it was up. And then again today, this morning, it was down and it closed up. But it's basically right where it was a week ago. And so part of the reason I think it closed up today was this meeting that you referenced, Janet Yellen with the, you know, getting a crisis meeting together with all the different bank supervisors and regulators. And I think it's the market kind of front running some kind of expected QE slash bailout slash easy money policy. And my thing that we discussed this a week ago was, even if that is the case, the hole that they're trying to fill is enormous. And we don't know how they're trying. We know that they're going to try to fill it. We don't know if it's going to be big enough. We don't know if it's going to be quick enough. And so I'm not even sure if they do say it's QE, that that's a positive thing. Could be, but I'm not ready to say that it is. So, this is just a way of summarizing this, another one of these crazy weeks where, we don't really have any answers yet. I think the volatility is going to continue. The NASDAQ is now up on the month. The NASDAQ was at its highest point, I think, a month, a couple of days ago. I don't think that this is sustainable. I think this, I've been saying this all year. We're kind of starting to get into this volatility, but nothing has really broke yet. And that's kind of the main, that's kind of the amazing thing to me, is despite, I shouldn't say nothing has broke, a few of the banks have broke, but there hasn't been widespread contagion yet. It's starting, you can kind of see it starting, but so far the market is hanging on. The market has been incredibly resilient, and that's kind of where we're at.
Well, it's been a not yet cycle for a very long time. I think since the GFC, everyone has been waiting for that double dip, end of the world moment, and we just haven't had it. So it's, some of the themes that you reference, we've also had the theme around jawboning. We've also had the theme around markets trade on expectations. So it's part of perhaps one of the reasons we're seeing this violently sideways is because between expectations and the jawboning, no one can really make sense of what's going on, especially when the real-time, real-life data or events that are unfolding aren't really jiving with either one of those expectations and or Fed comments. And so speaking of, you have, for a while now, it's been really hard to see where, the markets continually front-run this potential that the Fed breaks something and then they respond with more liquidity. And it's been really hard in that environment to imagine what actually ends up breaking, because nobody's being conservative. Everyone's just trying to be a step ahead of the Fed. And so it is one of those things that feels like it's that last grain of sand that creates the avalanche. Another thing that we've talked about, where finally everyone runs and exits. But for now, everyone thinks it's going to be kind of just this little bit of a bump in the road. The Fed's going to come out and do more QE, more than what some would consider the BTFP to be. And everyone's going to watch their risk assets go to the moon. And so when you're looking at jawboning and you're looking at market behavior as an expectation, but then you're also looking potentially at things that are happening in the real economy, like what's going on in the Europe markets, Deutsche Bank, the Euro dollar markets, and also what's happening with the Fed funds markets, where would you start to push your chips at this point?
Well, I'll tell you, it's very hard. And I've talked about this before. Like, this is, to me, this is one of the most challenging times in 25 years of doing this now. And I've said over and over again that, don't let the markets bully you around. Like, you need to kind of have a plan, and, don't lose your head when everybody else is, right? And so my biggest challenge right now is doing nothing. Like, I'm trying very hard to just do nothing. Like, I'm already kind of positioned the way I want to be positioned, and I'm having a hard time getting conviction in either way. If we have a huge market sell-off, I'm going to be okay. I'm positioned for it. If the market grinds higher and takes off, I will make money. I won't make as much money as if I was levered long, but I'll make money. And it's funny, I have a friend who, he's probably the best money manager I know. And I may have mentioned this guy before, but I talk to him every Friday morning. And he kind of leans bullish and kind of tends to think everything's going to work out. And I kind of tend to lean bearish and kind of think we're going to have all these problems. But we're both positioned pretty much the same way. We typically don't disagree on too much. Sometimes we do. But it's funny because today, again, we said, with knowing what's out there, and what is out there right now is a global banking system systemic potential problem. Now, we don't know for sure it's going to become a problem, but that is the issue. And it's global and it's systemic. And when you have that It's in that type of an environment where just really, really bad things can happen. So to be aggressive in that type of an environment, you can potentially make a lot of money, but it's, that's also the environment where you can get really hurt. And so we were talking this morning and we were both saying that, you know, we're kind of just kind of neutrally positioned. And that's frustrating because if you're in this business, you want to make money, right? It's like being a poker player. The best poker players in the world play less than 20% of the hands. The bad poker players, the reason they're bad poker players is they play 50% of the hands. They play even when they don't have the cards. And what makes the best poker players is they have discipline. And they're willing to sit there and watch hands that they could bet on go by because they don't have the goods. You know, they could play, but they don't have the odds in their favor. And so what's going on with me right now is, and I'll admit it's frustrating. I'm the first to say that, you know, I'm always the guy saying, keep your head, don't get frustrated. You know, it's hard. It's hard to remain neutral. It's hard to remain, it's hard to not get frustrated, especially when you see these things going on. And this is where I would bring back in, you know, my narrative. And I think sometimes narratives get a bad rap. And they can, if you just follow, if you jump from one narrative to another, they can. But when I'm talking about a narrative, I'm talking about your own narrative. And I think people have to figure out their own style of investing. They have to figure out their own framework for investing. And then they can craft a narrative around it that fits their style. And what I mean by that is, whether or not the whole milkshake theory ends up being right, I don't know. I think it will be, but I don't know. But what it has allowed me to do is have a framework to view all of this stuff in. And so I've already thought about all these different kinds of things as part of my framework. So when I see the headline pump up, I don't have to jump at that headline. And as an example, when the Z and Putin headline pops up, oh, we're going to trade everything you want, I don't have to rush and like get out of dollars, right? And then when the other headline pops up that Yellen's maybe going to backstop all the banks, oh, I have to go buy equities, right? The great thing about having a framework and having your own process is you don't have to trade the headlines. So it's you have to follow them. It's good to read them. It's take them into consideration. But if you know, I have a guy that I correspond to, and every time a headline, he emails me the headline, and he'll be like this and this, and I always kind of have to walk him out and say, listen, you know, don't get too upset about a headline and don't get too excited about a headline. You know, take it, you know, in and analyze it, but you've got to come up with a long-term, medium-term thesis that most of your assets are in. And then if you want to trade a little bit on the headlines or when you think you see an opportunity, that's fine, but don't be swinging your whole portfolio back and forth based on a headline. And I think having a framework or having a narrative, however you want to define that, is very important if you don't want to get caught up in jumping from one headline to another.
And that's a great little drive-by or fly-by on a theme we've had as well, which is the whole clickbait, you know, chasing this one hyperbole after the other. Now, one of my favorite, I don't know who said it at this point, but one of my favorite lines is when it comes to this macro, these types of macro conversations in the dollar milkshake theory is, the dollar is our currency, but your problem. And so now we're in this situation, and you've highlighted a lot recently that if you think the US is bad, wait till Europe really starts to, you know, catch fire because of the negative bond yields that they were trading, et cetera. So do you think, obviously there's still this deposit outflow issue, but do you think when a meeting such as this is called by Janet Yellen, is this a day late to the fact the markets and the news feeds put her foot in her mouth with this comment that they weren't going to backstop deposits above 250? Or do you think this is a response to what's going on in the CDS markets for Deutsche Bank? Do you think she is, and as a group, I've always said I feel like none of these people are making decisions in a vacuum. It's coordinated. But do you think this meeting is more about the U.S. or is this trying to kind of calm a global systemic issue?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. And I don't think that she just held this in a vacuum. I don't necessarily think they called it just because stocks sold off the other day either. You know, clearly when she made the comment, the market started to sell off. They don't necessarily want to see that. But again, I don't think that the Fed minds that stocks are down a little bit. But what they don't want is a systemic crisis. They don't want the whole system to come down. Right. And with everything that was already going on with, you know, Silicon Valley Bank and with Credit Suisse, they probably didn't need her at that point in time to make a comment that she, you know, if she just would have said nothing, it would have been better than to answer the way that she did. And so what I think they're doing is I think they are now just trying to come up with, I think they're trying to develop their own framework, right? How do we deal with this when it comes, so that they don't have to jump from headline to headline either? The problem is there is really no way to solve this. I mean, this is the problem with taking rates low and then taking rates negative, is there's almost no escape. And I will say, of all the mistakes that the Fed has made, the fact that they did not take rates negative is a huge blessing, a relative blessing to the United States, because negative rates are a prison you cannot escape from. You will blow up the banking system, and you'll see that that's happening now. And that's the other thing. I think that we have talked about this before, but if we haven't, I'm going to address it again now, is a lot of people have said, oh, great, look at these geniuses at the Fed. They raised rates, made the dollar strong. They thought they were going to blow up their enemies. They thought they were going to blow up Russia, and instead they ended up blowing up themselves. Okay, there is some truth to that. This is a problem for the U.S. banking system. But the idea that this started in the United States is completely wrong. You know, last September, actually last year, last summer, the Bank of China, the PBOC, had to aggressively ease monetary policy in order to keep their economy going. In September, the Bank of England, the Bank of Japan, and the ECB all had to intervene in their sovereign markets and their currency markets to keep them from crashing, to keep their systems from coming down. So the idea that this started in the U.S. and the rest of the world is fine is completely wrong. It started overseas, and now it is coming home. And this is an issue that the central banks are going to have to try to cooperate together to figure out a solution. The problem is, whereas we did this last time in COVID, we were kind of facing a globally systemic event, and everybody was kind of working together. That's not the case anymore. The world is more bifurcated now. It's more, less cooperation. We've got these problems between the United States and Russia, United States and China, and sides are being drawn. And I don't think that, you know, the Western central banks will be as quickly to help the non-ally countries as they were before. And you, in the last week, you saw, we mentioned this a little bit on Monday. On Sunday night, they announced they were opening up swap lines again with all these countries. But they only opened them up to like five countries. They didn't open them up to the whole world. And I think this will be a tool going forward to help our friends and not help our enemies. And maybe that's a good way to, you know, you're either with us or against us type of a thing. I'm not saying that's the right way to go about it. I'm just saying I think that's what they're doing. And, you know, Russia's not going to get a swap line. China is probably not going to get a swap line. They might if things get bad enough. And then they set up this other facility. I can't remember the name of all these. Basically, country central bank repo. And this week, somebody drew down $60 billion. That could potentially be China that drew down that. Because they don't, China doesn't have a swap line. And so this is an issue for the whole world. The whole world is dealing with rising rates, and it's going to be a relative game. One country is going to be better off than the rest of the countries, and everybody's going to get hurt. But I think that's what Yellen is trying to deal with. I think she's trying to figure out, how do we come at this so that we seem like we are in control? First of all, they're not in control, but they need to at least have the appearance that they're in control.
Yeah, if there's anything to say about what's been going on, it's the first time perhaps since the V-shaped recovery and the response during COVID that the market has very clearly shown that they are in control and that the Fed and central planners are not. So this is the first time in a while now that they've had to kind of, you know, load their guns and get out their lassos and try to, you know, calm down the wild steer of the market. Now, you know, to kind of wrap up here, you know, you're talking about this this contagion, the systemic issues, and how there's a bit of coordination, but not so much, and that there's going to be more pain potentially for the non-allies or those who aren't necessarily a cooperative partner. I think of pain in the sense of one of the comments that I think we've been getting a lot of, or they're really just dialogue, is there's an enthusiasm about all of this, like, and it's not just in the milkshake show, right? It's you see it somewhat in the Bitcoin camp and in the precious metals camp, but everyone looks at this kind of somewhat pivotal moment and starts to like rub their hands and drool a little, like, oh, this is generational wealth opportunity, like there's so much money to be made. When, you know, like you just said, you're more neutral and or defensive at this moment. So without, you know, kind of saying, hey, be careful, everyone out there, where do you think the average person who doesn't necessarily have access to more of the sophisticated insurance or defensive plays, what's the best thing for them to do? Just kind of do the same thing you're saying as far as like take a breath and take a step back? Are we getting closer to that moment for Bitcoin and gold? Like, where do you see the play for the average guy?
I think the average for the average person, you know, who's kind of working a 9-to-5 job, somewhat living paycheck to paycheck, maybe is able to save a little bit, maybe is able to, you know, max out their 401k, but isn't living, you know, some grand lifestyle. I think the most important thing right now is you've got to have some cash on the sidelines. Now, that's, you know, I realize, you know, people are worried about inflation, but, you know, I've talked about this before, like having some cash on the sidelines will keep you from having to liquidate other things. If we go into, you know, if we have a big sell-off, the last thing you want to do is be a forced seller. So if you sell ahead of time and you have cash on the sidelines, you can actually use that as an opportunity rather than, you know, be forced to sell something. Now, I realize that if inflation continues, then maybe that's a drag a little bit on, you know, your purchasing power. But hopefully you also, if we do get into some kind of an environment where, maybe the other parts of your portfolio, whether you're in gold, maybe you have some land, your 401k, hopefully that part is doing okay and offsetting the drag. But I think that's the most important thing is you have to have some kind of a safety net right now, whether it's T-bills, whether it's cash. I don't know. The other thing I would tell, this is me telling you to panic before everybody else panics. Go down to the bank and get $5,000 in cash. Or 10,000, whatever the number is, have some actual physical cash in a safe or somewhere that you can get to quick. Doesn't mean that the whole world's going to end, but it also means that if whatever happens, there's a run on your bank, you have something. There's not a whole lot of downside to having, you know, a little bit of cash, you know, other than, you know, you don't want to advertise it because you don't want anybody coming to your house looking for it. But I think just doing the, and I think everybody should own some physical gold. You know, I don't think it's going to pay off right away, but I think everybody should have it. And having cash and gold, and I've said this many times, I'd go to war with dollars and gold. You know, to me, those are the two most important things you can own right now to get through what's coming. Because I've said this before, too, is I think the next couple of years are about survival. I don't think they're about, you know, becoming, you know, the next Warren Buffett. I think some people might have that opportunity, but the most important thing is to just survive it. And I think, you know, dollars and gold are the two most important things to help you survive it.
So just to be clear, the cash on the sidelines isn't necessarily for the purpose of buying the next dip. This is, like you're saying, it's liquidity to get you through the storm. Like, you can see the clouds rolling in, you know, go grab yourself an umbrella. And look, you're listening to something like this, you're already questioning what's going on and how to be better positioned for it. I remember during, like, when COVID was only a thing in China, no one in the US was even talking about it. That's when I went to the bank and pulled cash out. And so it's a similar idea, like you're saying, panic before everyone else panics. So you're not in some sort of crisis. And the liquidity you're recommending isn't to go buy an asset on the cheap. It's actually to be able to hunker down and survive that war as it slowly unfolds, because no one really knows what's going on. So you really want the most liquid and pristine collateral. So interesting. Get yourself some cash. Maybe think about gold. I won't get into it now, but it'll be interesting to see if there's any kind of Bitcoin or response to those two recommendations, considering you left the digital currency out. But we have things to talk about on that perhaps after the weekend, and we see what blows up, because it feels like this is the game too. Friday, wait for the market to close, and let's see what bank or business we shut down and merger.
Yeah, you know, back in 2020, that was and even 2008, 2009 timeframe, and then again in 2020, you know, you would go into these weekends and you just knew something, you knew some shoe was going to drop that weekend. I kind of feel like we're back in that now. Maybe this weekend will be quiet, but, you know, the last two or three weekends it's been that way. Kind of feels like we're back in that environment. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see what happens when we come in on Monday morning.
Well, we'll keep all eyes on the market and the clickbait headlines to see if there's any shoes falling from the sky. But make sure you get an umbrella that can withstand it. And we'll be back in a couple of days. Brent, I appreciate it. And we'll see what kind of excitement we've got on our Monday or Tuesday when we connect again. So for anyone who isn't already, please hit the subscribe button. Follow us on YouTube and Twitter with the handle @MilkshakesPod. Anything about the show or this conversation is a little unfamiliar to you, please visit the website. We try to give you some links and resources to explain that. That's milkshakespod.com. Brent, any last words before we sign off?
No, I think, you know, just have a good weekend and we'll talk again next week.
Yeah, watch some basketball and take your mind off of it. All right, man, I appreciate it. I'll see you in a couple of days.
See you guys. Mm-hmm.